Hello, everyone. Hello, Cheryl. Happy Sunday. it's been another fairly relaxing day around the household today. I went to church this morning, and then I had a board meeting. But since I've been home, it's just been relaxing. I talked to my dad for an hour on the phone today. I only talked to my dad or my mom. They're divorced. I talked to them separately, but I only talked to them every few months, even though I love them dearly, and we feel very, very close. We don't talk a lot, you know. We just live our lives and love each other. But I did talk to my dad today for an hour. That was really, really nice. Read a little bit. I'm still reading that novel, The Robe, because I don't spend a lot of time reading novels. When I sit down, I spend more time with things like The Seven Steps to Awakening or something like that. But every now and then I feel to go back to it, so I read it a little bit today. So I'm real relaxed. It's cold here today. I think that also adds to the feeling of relaxed. It's our first real cold day this year. Of course, since we're in Pueblo, it unless it's an unusual year, it won't stay cold. We get cold and then warm and then cold and then warm and then cold and then warm. They say in Pueblo you can't ever put away your summer clothes, because, you know, just because winter's here, that doesn't mean it won't be in the 70s or 80s tomorrow. You might still need them. So all the houses here, they say, have big closets because you can't ever put away any of your clothes. But today it's winter, and I'm having hot tea, and I read a novel. Oh, and I see Cheryl says it's cold in California, in the L.A. area, too. So, and my dad said that the cold front, he's in Arkansas, it was moving in there. That's why he was in the house. So I guess that's just what's happening. And I see Francine has entered the room. Her daughter, my authentic American redhead is what I'm calling her now, because she's making me a dream catcher. I think I talked about this last night, my dream catcher. I wanted a dream catcher to hang in a certain place in the house. Both Danielle and I agreed that a nice big turquoise dream catcher would look great there. And I looked at hundreds, literally hundreds of dream catchers on the internet, and could not find one that seemed right. And so Danielle just decided to make one. She started on it yesterday, and she's nearly done with the hoop part. She worked on it all day yesterday and all day today. I mean, she's probably put at least 10 hours into it already, and she's almost done with the hoop part. And honestly, this is my honest opinion. Of course, opinions are always just made up, but this is my honest made up opinion. I'm going to own the most beautiful dream catcher in the world. I do believe that. You should see this dream catcher she's making me. It's beautiful. Cheryl's asking, how did she know how to make one? She watched a video. She looked up how to make a dream catcher, watched a video, then watched a couple more in part, and then she knew how. So I would say it's kind of an internal talent, actually, because I'm not the crafty type. I couldn't do it. But she's doing it, and it's going to be beautiful. I'll definitely post pictures of my dream catcher when it's done. She likes doing it. One reason she likes doing it is because I explained to her the symbolism of the dream catcher as it's reinterpreted to me. You know, for the Native Americans, they say that you hang the dream catcher above the bed, and it catches all of your dreams, but then it lets the good ones go on through, and it holds the bad ones so you don't have the bad dreams. I just interpret that as it lets Holy Spirit thoughts through, and it holds the ego thoughts. And she likes that interpretation, so she's having lots and lots of fun making my dream catcher. I told you I call her my authentic American redhead. That's because when I was looking at dream catchers, many of the dream catchers had little signs on them that would say, made by an authentic Native American. So I told her mine is made by an authentic American redhead. So there we go. So that's what's going on around here. And Clara, unless plans have changed, you must be just about a month and a half away from going to India, aren't you? Are you going to India in January? I remember you once mentioned that. And are you going with Ramanaji? Is that who you're going with? I noticed he's going in January. Yes. Good, good. I was looking at his trip, and I think it looks like he takes very good care of people. which I think is wonderful, you know, because it doesn't hurt to have somebody taking very good care of you in India because it's so different from here. And it looks like he gives great guidance, kind of shows you around a little bit before he sets you free there, takes really good care of you. So I'm really happy you're going with him. I have never met Ramanuji. I think he might know who I am. I'm not certain, but I think he might. Just tell him I said hello, and then we'll find out that way. Okay? Leaving on January 26th. Okay, well, have a wonderful time in Tiruvannamalai. That's great. All right, tell you what. Why don't we go into a few moments of silence, and then we'll begin the seven steps. Amen. All right, so we are here for the seven steps to awakening, and we're going to begin tonight on number 387. What I will do is give you a link to 387 in my journal for those of you who like to follow along in the journal. If you're listening on the radio, I was just noticing Cheryl's comment, maybe Danielle can start a business making dream catchers. I already made that suggestion, so we'll see what happens. Anyway, back to business. If you're listening on the radio, in order to join us in the journal, go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the website, up on the menu bar, click on step 2, and then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 387, because that's where we're starting tonight. Number 387. It's on page 73 in the Seven Steps to Awakening, and it looks like these quotes are coming from the Supreme Yoga. Number 387 is very, very short. Here is the first quote. The self, meaning the capital S self, is devoid of the senses. The self is devoid of the senses. Okay, let's go to 387. One thing that I laughingly notice when I'm reading some of these masters, Ramana Maharshi, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, the Supreme Yoga, is how incredibly intelligent they were. Their vocabularies, at least, their way of expressing themselves, seem to be very, very intelligent. And often when I'm reading them, I have to read them with a dictionary in my lap. It doesn't really mean anything. It's just something that I notice. Number 387 in my journal. I don't think you'll need a dictionary for my journal, but it's long. You may need patience. This particular quote is long. Willingness. So here we go. What am I? And what is my relationship to this body? It has already been determined that I do not directly experience the world. Now, if you've been listening to my Seven Steps teachings, following my Seven Steps journal, then you know what's happening in step two, is that I am being led internally through a self-inquiry. And as I've explained before, this is not really happening at the level of intellectual mind or thinking mind at all. This is a purely intuitive process, the way I'm experiencing it. When I am just simply contemplating the quotes, and I'll come back and explain what I mean by contemplate in a moment, but when I am contemplating the quotes, the inquiry begins to arise in me. I don't think up the inquiry. I'm not asking questions that I had read from, you know, Ramana Maharshi or Srinivasagadatta or anybody else. I'm not asking questions that I've been told I should ask as a part of an inquiry process. What's happening is the inquiry just starts to rise. The question rises. And as I write the question out on my notebook, then the next thing that rises is actually the clarity that sees the answer. So it's really pretty amazing in that, in a way, the I that is the thinking mind, that I is not involved in the inquiry process at all. The inquiry process is being witnessed more than anything else, because the question is being given and the answer is being seen. There's no thinking, no figuring out going on at all. So it's pretty amazing to watch this inquiry process. I mentioned that what I do is I contemplate a quote, and then whatever comes, whether it's going to be a kind of a written out statement or whether it's going to be an inquiry, whatever comes just comes. When I contemplate, I am purposefully not thinking, not in the way that we were taught to think in school, to think about a problem and figure out the answer. When I contemplate, I read quietly. I read the quote quietly. And then I just kind of sit, the way I describe it, because it's kind of the best words for how I experience it, is that I just kind of sit there in my heart in silence with the quote. And if something begins to come, then I go ahead and start writing. But if something doesn't begin to come, what will happen for me after a certain period of time, and it's not a very long period of time, is that my thinking mind will start to think. And as soon as my thinking mind starts to think, I read the quote again. I read the quote again very slowly, and then I sit in my heart until either something comes or the thinking mind starts to try and think. And if the thinking mind starts to try and think, I read the quote again. And this is what I do. So you can tell that I am purposefully not allowing the thinking mind to get involved. That's why I call it contemplation instead of thinking. Because I'm purposefully not letting the thinking mind get involved. I'm contemplating. I'm staying as still as I can be until something arises that is given. And I can't describe the difference between what arises that is given and the thinking, except that it just has a completely different feel to it. But to be able to describe that completely different feel, that's something I'm unable to do. But anyway, back to number 387. So what's happening here is everything that you're looking at, this is a part of an inquiry that's been going on in step two with me. So starting at the top again, what am I and what is my relationship to this body? It has already been determined. When it says it has already been determined, that means through inquiry during step two. I have seen this. Right? It has already been determined that I do not directly experience the world. The body experiences the world through its senses. It has also been seen that the body is experienced through thought and attention. So these are, you know, kind of conclusions I've reached, clarity I've reached through two separate earlier inquiries. One is that whatever I am, the true I, the actual I, does not experience the body. If I, you know, throw my arm down really hard and I hit this desk with my little finger and I feel pain, the I have observed, does not feel the pain. It's the body that feels the pain. And I've been able to see that. So I'm clear on that. So I don't directly experience the pain. The pain is experienced through the body. And were there no body, there would also be no pain. So then my next question in the inquiry was, well, do I directly experience the body? Is the I directly experiencing the body? And what I found as I followed the inquiry was that the I doesn't even directly experience the body. What I found is the body is only experienced through thought. That when there is literally no thought, for example, when you are sound asleep at night, you know, in your deep sleep, there is no experience of the body. Lots of people will report there's no experience of the body during meditation. I experience that a lot, even in contemplation, and that I'm writing, and in that way the body is being used, but it's not until I stop the contemplation, until I feel it's done, that I notice I'm hungry and I have to pee. You know, that consciousness of the body was not there when the thought was not present about the body. So the I doesn't even directly experience the body. I, at best, experiences the body through thought. So if you look at this, the I now is really pretty far back from the world, because as far as the inquiry has taken me so far, I, through a filter of thought, experience a body, and through a filter of body, experience the world, right? So the I no way directly experiences the world. It's at least twice removed. Removed through the body and then removed through thought. Or is that three times removed? I don't know where the counting happens. But it's definitely not a direct experience, the world. All right, so again, starting over at the top of 387. What am I and what is my relationship to this body? It has already been determined that I do not directly experience the world. The body experiences the world through its senses. It has also been seen that the body is experienced through thought and attention. So now the next inquiry rises up. Am I thought and attention? Is that what I am? Am I the thought and attention that directly experiences the body? If the body is experienced through thought and attention, I must be thought and attention in order to say that I directly experience the body. Is this true? Am I thought and attention? Oh, last time I taught, these guys called and I said, I really wanted to talk to them, but wasn't a good time. Here they come again. I guess eventually one day they'll call me when I'm not teaching, because I do want to talk to them. We'll wait till the phone quits ringing. It's funny, they always call when I'm teaching. Danielle wants to talk to them too, but she almost never answers my phone. So I don't think she will. She probably doesn't realize who it is. Okay. If the body is experienced through thought and attention, I must be thought and attention in order to say that I directly experience the body. Is this true? Am I thought and attention? I can discern thought. I can choose between thoughts. If I can discern thought and choose between thoughts, can I be thought? No. I must be something else, something that sees thought. And it's interesting because this reminds me of a story in NTI Mark. NTI Mark, of course, is a fictional story. It's not meant to be the true story of Jesus and his lifetime. But in those fictional stories are being used to point towards truth, real truth, not the truth of Jesus' life, but truth that's beyond life, beyond human life, right? And one of the stories in NTI is the story of Jesus is talking to people about how their actions cannot make them clean or unclean. But then he goes on to see not even your thoughts can make you clean or unclean. He says because you can choose between your thoughts. And if you can choose between your thoughts, then the essence of you has to be something else. Because you can't choose what you are. What you are is just a natural essence that comes directly from your Father. You cannot choose that. So if you're able to look at a thought and decide whether you want to believe it or not, decide whether you want to act on it or not, then you cannot be a thought. You cannot be your thoughts. So that's what this is saying also. It's saying, I can discern thought. And I know I can because I have been discerning thoughts now since some point in 2004. I can choose between thoughts. I've been doing that consciously since, well, probably all of my life, but choosing between ego and Holy Spirit thoughts since some point in 2004. So if I can discern thought and choose between thoughts, can I be thought? No. I must be something else. Something that sees thought. All right, so what about attention? What of attention? I can seem to get lost in attention. Wake up to the realization that I was lost in attention and redirect attention. If I can redirect attention, am I attention? No. I cannot be the attention I direct. So if I am doing dishes or taking a shower or brushing my teeth or something, and my mind starts wandering to what happened at the board meeting today at the Center for Inner Peace, and I start thinking about that board meeting that happened a couple hours ago or yesterday or whatever, and then I notice that thinking, and I realize that mind wandering is just participating in ego, and I choose now to let go of that thinking, to step into a mantra, and to put my attention on my heart. Well, what is directing that attention? It's not the attention that's directing the attention. The attention is what is being directed. It's not thoughts that are directing the attention, because it's thoughts that are being let go and new thoughts that are being kind of picked up, the mantra. So what is doing this directing? I can't be the attention if I can direct the attention, right? I can't be the thoughts if I can choose between the thoughts. So what can see and discern between thoughts? What can notice and direct attention? All right, here comes the next level of the inquiry. Can mind... Is there something called mind? As the creator of both thoughts and attention, see and manage thoughts and attention. Am I mind? Now, intellectually, you know, if we've been studying Ramana Maharshi and Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, we may say, no, I'm not mind. Because I read that in the book. They told me I'm not mind. I'm not mind. But that's intellectual. I happened to catch a little bit of Muji today while I was eating breakfast. I decided to spend 5 or 10 minutes watching Muji. And he was saying something similar. He was talking about people who come to satsang. You know, he says, of course, you know, part of Muji's teachings is teaching that we're all one, you know, and so these people come to satsang and they'll say, okay, I get it. We're one. I get it. I got it. I'm done. Bye. He says, they don't get it. That's intellectual. Well, if I was to very quickly say, no, I'm not mind. I read that. I know that. That's not the same thing as seeing or realizing. That's intellectual. So even though I have the intellectual knowledge that I am not mind, because I've read it from Ramana Maharshi and Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, I need to go beyond that intellectual knowledge to the seeing. And this inquiry is now ready to go there. So instead of quickly answering the question, am I mind? I'm going to allow the inquiry to unfold, just like the previous inquiries have unfolded. The one that showed me I am not the body, nor do I directly experience the body. The one that has shown me I am not the thoughts, I am not attention, right? I'm now going to let it lead me through the next level in my mind. This is a worthy question that isn't to be quickly discounted if truth is to be realized, rather than basing the idea of truth on teachings that are learned and believed. I will not rush by this question. I will wait for something that is recognized as the answer. There is time. Again, as I mentioned to you with contemplation, I purposefully do not allow thinking to get involved. I have to wait for the gift that comes that isn't through thinking. And so what I am promising here is to wait for the gift, the answer to the question in my mind. But it has to come in that same way that all of the gifts come. And then in italics, this was actually written afterwards, that's why it's in italics in parentheses. It was realized immediately after experiencing this contemplation inquiry that mind cannot be used to determine the answer to the question. It was realized I cannot use mind, thinking, to answer the question, am I mind? Mind is too limiting. That could be felt intuitively. The answer must come from beyond mind. Now look at this next paragraph. Are you ready? If I can decide not to use mind to answer this inquiry, and I can decide to wait for the answer to present itself, can I be mind? Can I be that which I have decided not to use? There's the answer already. It came so quickly as a realization, as a seeing, something that is not intellectual. I know I'm not thought because I can choose between thoughts. I know I'm not attention because I can redirect attention. And I know I am not mind because I can decide not to use mind and to wait for something to be given. If I can decide not to use mind, then I am not mind. And you see, I didn't get that through reading a book. I got that through an inner seeing, an inner realizing that was given as a gift. The gift came quickly. I'm looking now at the board. Tay asked a little bit ago, is the question and answer arising from two different sources? And she's referring to when I said, when I'm doing the contemplation, both the question, the inquiry is given, and the answer is given. They are not given by two different sources. It is the same source. If we were to use the language of A Course in Miracles, the entire process is coming from the Holy Spirit, both the question and the answer. All right. So why don't we go on now to 388. If you're in the journal with me, you can just scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 388. I'm also going to put a link in the room for those of you who are not in the journal but want to be. And then I will start by reading 388 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is coming from the Supreme Yoga. That alone can be regarded as the truth, which has always been and which will always be. It's only calling it that. It's not pointing at anything. It's the that of the sentence, I am that, which is the title of Sri Nisargadatta's book, right? I am that. That alone can be regarded as the truth, which has always been and which will always be. All right, let's look at the journal 388. What sees, and can I see that? It makes sense that if I can see something, that is an object and not I. The teaching is that all objects are illusory and do not exist. But in order not to make the mistake of replacing belief with belief, I will not jump to this teaching as a mental conclusion. So again, notice how I am actively keeping the thinking mind, the intellectual mind, out of this. Everything has to come as a gift of true seeing. I don't want to say, well, I've heard Muji say this, or, you know, who are some of the other teachers? I can't think of anybody right now. Anyway, are any of those other guys or girls? I've heard them say this. I know that the world is not real, that the objects are all illusory. They do not actually exist. You know, I've read that from Ramana. I've read that from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. I don't want to do that. Because that's not awakening. That's what step one was all about. The difference between mental or intellectual knowing and knowing. And basically, you know, if we were to sum step one from the seven steps up in just a couple of words, we would say, mind can never do this. Meaning mind, we cannot awaken through mind. And that sentence, mind can never do this, is actually a quote from the teachings of Inner Ramana. And that's what step one was all about. So since I know that mind can never do this, I want to be sure to keep mind out of it. Because if mind starts getting involved and saying, I know, the world's illusion, I know, I'm not my thoughts, I know, I'm not mind, I'm actually not getting anywhere. So the teaching, I understand the teaching, I've read the teaching, I've heard the teaching. The teaching is that all objects are illusory and do not exist. But in order not to make the mistake of replacing belief with belief, I will not jump to this teaching as a mental conclusion. I will not. It's a decision. I'm going to pretend like I'm from Missouri and I'm going to say, show me. Did you guys know that about Missouri? It's the show me state. Show me. I can see and manage thought. So I am not thought. I realize that. That's not intellectual. That's a realization. I can see and manage attention. So I am not attention. I realize that. I can decide to use mind or not use mind. So I am not mind. Is there any object before mind that can be grasped or seen? Now I'm looking. I'm really looking. It's a Holy Spirit guided looking, using the language of A Course in Miracles. Can I find any object, something that I can see, something that I can manage, that is prior to mind? And after looking, really looking within myself, the answer was no. There is no object before mind that can be grasped or seen. Therefore, object must begin at mind and be within mind's perception. And I, who sees all of these objects, including mind, must be before mind. If we imagine mind as a moment using the symbol of brain, which is not what it is, but just so we can have a physical form, I can hold a brain. Hopefully it's in a jar of some kind of liquid. But I can hold a brain and look at a brain. It's an object outside of me. Well, with formless mind, it's the same. Maybe I can't hold it in my hands, But then I'm not really the body, am I? I, whatever this witnessing presence is, I can see mind. During contemplation, when mind begins to think, I choose not to allow that thinking. And I make a decision, well, I make a decision to use mind differently. I use mind to read. That's still using mind. But I'm deciding how to use that mind. I'm not going to allow the thinking because I'm unconcerned with what thinking has to say about this quote. So I will just use mind to read the quote again. And now I will be still. I see the thinking coming back. I decide not to use the thinking. Instead, I use mind to read the quote again. And now I be still. I have to be before mind because I'm using mind like a tool. Like a hammer. Right? A carpenter uses a hammer. This is good for a hammer. I'll use the hammer for this. The next task is not good for the hammer. I'll put the hammer down and not use the hammer. Doing the same thing with mind. So the mind is a mere tool. What is the eye that's using it? It has to be before mind. Mind is kind of outside of it, you could say. That's a symbol, of course, because there's no inside outside. But outside of, just like when I was, you know, I can see it like an object is the point. So now we've determined through inquiry, I am not the body. I am not thought. I am not attention. And I am not mind. I am before all of that. Which is why I have the ability to use it in the way I choose to use it. To place it where I choose to place it. To believe it or not believe it. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 389. Oh, and Ron is asking, are you saying that awakening is through experience? I don't remember what I was saying when you wrote that, Ron, so now I don't understand the question because the word experience can be interpreted in a couple of different ways, you know, so it's all a matter of what you mean by the question as to what the answer is. I don't know if there's anything you want to write out that explains the question better for me. When I'm reading from my journal is on my screen, and I cannot see ACIM Gather. So usually until I stop reading from the journal and I minimize it, I don't know what you're writing on the board. So that's why I catch up a little late. So if it's not through thought, okay. So yes, awakening is not through thought. It is through what I'm going to call direct experience or direct knowing. And Jesus refers to this, as you know, I'm sure, Ron, in the Course. When Jesus says, it might be in the clarification of terms, I think it's actually in the introduction to the clarification of terms. Not that I'm a Course expert, but I still think I might be right here. Jesus says that there will never be one theology, but there is one experience. And that would be the experience of awakening that he's referring to there. The direct experience. Okay. And of course, now you're going to turn around and you're going to go on Facebook and you're going to see Bentino or somebody saying that you don't awaken through experience. They're actually interpreting the word differently then. They're referring to things like the senses and thinking. Yeah, the problem with words is that words get used in more than one way. This is why words suck. But I assure you, Bentino's teachings are no different than these teachings. He's merely using words differently. And so he talks about, you'll notice that when I write, I often talk about before mind. He talks about before experience. And when he's talking about experience, he's talking about the experience of objects. Objects including things like thinking, attention, everything that's a part of mind or a part of the body or a part of the world. He's referring to experience as that. And so he says, before experience, I say before mind. We're actually both talking about the same thing. You know? It's kind of funny, huh? These words. And this is why at some point we need to intuitively understand so that we don't get knocked around when people use different words to say the same thing. All right. So now we are moving on to 389. And here is the quote from the Supreme Yoga. Mind alone is the seed for this delusion of world experience. It is the mind that gives rise to the false sense of I and mine. Again, mind alone is the seed for this delusion of world appearance. Mind alone is the seed. It is the mind that gives rise to the false sense of I and mine. All right, so let's look at the journal number 389. Another long one, very long one. Okay, so here we go. Let's separate I for a moment into object I, which can be seen, and I, which cannot be seen. Now, I borrowed the term I from Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi uses the term I to refer to the true self. And again, we're using funky words. But here's how, at least for a few journal entries, these terms are going to be defined. I, and not consistent throughout the entire journal, by the way, so that nobody gets confused, just over the next few entries. I is object I, or I that can be seen. Therefore, it can't be the true self because the true self, I can see it. And then there's I, true self, which cannot be seen because it is not an object. All right. So now that we're clear on how the terms are going to be used in this inquiry, let's begin the inquiry. Beginning with the body, there is strong attachment to the body as I. I seem to be this body. It seems that if there is no body, right, there is no I. If the body is sick or injured, I am sick or injured. Is this true? Now, as coincidence would have it, during this inquiry, my eye began to suddenly itch, which gave me something physical to look at. So I wrote that right now my eye itches. Do I itch? That's the inquiry. Right now, my eye itches. Do I itch? As I look carefully at this, I see the eye itches. I see the sensation of itching. But I notice that if I watch with subtle attention, I can distinguish between I, which does not experience the sensation of itching, and the body, which experiences the sensation. I can see or watch the sensation, but the seer or watcher itself has no sensation. The body, then, is object I. The one who sees is I. Now, you can imagine, I think, that this paragraph was written with very deep looking. And again, using the language of A Course in Miracles, it's looking that was guided by the Holy Spirit. But as I looked at the itching, I was intuitively aware of the I, which we're going to call I. that was fully observant, but not itself having any sensation. It's like I could see the body from behind it. And I could see that the body itched. And I could see that if I put my attention fully with the body and forgot myself, that I would think that I itch, right? But in this moment, my attention wasn't fully with the body. I wasn't forgetting myself. And I could see that what I am had no sensation at all. Therefore, it did not itch. So I was able to separate the object I, which we often confuse for ourselves, the body, with something that has to be, for lack of better words, more real or more center to what I am. It was more inward, again, using symbols of in and out. The body became outside, and this I that was observing the itch was more inside, more core, and it had no itch to it. All right, let's keep looking. So we've looked at a body sensation. Now, looking at thoughts. I seem to think thoughts. And without alertness, those thoughts seem to be the same as me. If I think, I do not like, dot, 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 you know, fill in the dot. I do not like that person. I do not like that weather. I do not like that food. I do not like that habit, right? If I think I do not like, there is an immediate experience of not liking. But if I have seen that this seemingly direct experience only exists without alertness, I have seen that this seemingly direct experience only exists without alertness. If I am alert to the thought I do not like, and I accept that the thought has no meaning, there isn't an experience of not liking. With alertness, thoughts happen with no change in experience. And this, of course, is something that, that I practice throughout the day. I don't even know if the word practice is necessarily true anymore because this has become somewhat natural for me. Thoughts definitely still arise here. I have not yet had the experience of thoughts quieting and stopping. My mind is as active as any human mind, I'm certain. It's somewhat more benign. I don't see as much judgment, attack, you know, fear, worry, as I used to. But the activity, even though it's somewhat different and more benign, is just as active. I have not yet experienced a reduction in mental activity, just a change in mental activity. And a part of what mental activity attempts to do is have opinions. And sometimes I don't notice, and I temporarily think I have an opinion. And usually the way I discover that I temporarily think I have an opinion is I'll hear it coming out of my mouth. And just then, you know, what I do is I literally laugh inside at myself as I hear it coming out of my mouth because I understand that's not really my opinion. I just fell for a thought for a moment. And usually hearing myself say it wakes me up immediately. So I don't hold on to any opinion any longer than to have expressed it. But often, it doesn't even go that far. It's never attached to long enough to even be said. Because what happens is that as the opinions try to arise, I just notice them as meaningless thoughts attempting to arise. And when I notice them as meaningless, then they're not grabbed a hold of. And there's not even a moment that I think I have that opinion, right? They just go right on by. So I may believe I don't like cold weather. If that thought shows up and I'm not alert and I accidentally believe it and then I say it, but usually as soon as I say it, I don't like cold weather, I can laugh and I know I just told a lie. I said something about myself that's not true, right? Or I may see the thought, I don't like cold weather, and, you know, laugh at the meaninglessness of it, and it's never grabbed onto. So that's what this paragraph is saying, all right? Looking at thoughts, I seem to think thoughts, and without alertness, those thoughts seem the same as me, like I'm the one who doesn't like cold, right? If I think I do not like, there is an immediate experience of not liking. But I have seen that this seemingly direct experience only exists without alertness. If I am alert to the thought I do not like, and I accept that the thought has no meaning, there isn't an experience of not liking. With alertness, thoughts happen with no change in experience. All right, continuing on. I give meaning or do not give meaning to thoughts, right? I either think I don't like cold has meaning, or I realize I don't like cold is a meaningless idea. I give meaning or do not give meaning to thoughts. And through this process, I appear to experience or not experience thoughts as chosen. Therefore, thoughts are experiential objects. This is getting closer to Bentino's understanding, right? Or I would say not his understanding, because his understanding is the same. This is closer to Bentino's use of the word experience, right? Therefore, thoughts are experiential objects, which without alertness are mistakenly seen as I, because of the illusion of experience. So I say, I don't like cold, and I don't catch it, I'm non-alert, and then I'm getting grumpier and grumpier and grumpier as we go further and further into winter. I'm experiencing the thought, and I believe I am the one who does not like thought, but that's, I mean, does not like cold. But that's only because of non-alertness. It doesn't have to be true, but experience seems to make it seem like it's true. I shiver every time I feel the cold. I don't like it. The thought runs through my head again, right? Now, during this inquiry, just like the eye itch was given, watch this. Just now, there was a thought, I am tired of this inquiry process. Because as you can see, this was a long looking. This didn't happen in a minute. Just now, there was a thought, I am tired of this inquiry process. For a moment, I felt mental and physical tiredness. I seemed to be tired. But then alertness saw the thought. A wordless inquiry took place. Who am I? Attention. Notice how the mind is being used by what we call the Holy Spirit. Words are being used, right? Attention is being used. Attention separated the thought, I am tired of this inquiry process. Attention separated the thought and experience from I, and refocused on I. There is no sense in I, and so there is no sensation of tiredness. This awareness exposed the thought and sensation of tired as not true. And the clarity of seeing, the experience of tiredness vanished. So only when I was identified with the thought, I am tired of this inquiry process, was I feeling mentally and physically tired. Once the inquiry kicked in, who am I? And attention somehow miraculously showed me the difference between I and this idea. I mean, there was a true seeing that I doesn't get tired. Jesus talks about this in the Course. He talks about how, you know, our true self does not get tired. The tiredness only comes from judgment and from the belief in judgment. I doesn't get tired. And so in seeing that there was no sensation, no tiredness in I knew then that the thought, I am tired of this inquiry process, was an untrue thought, And the experience that came from believing that thought was also an untrue experience. What is seen here? Thought, attention, and body. All right? Thought, attention, and body work together in non-alertness to create a false experience that is identified with as I. This creates a false I, a me, having an experience of tiredness, which is not at all true. Do you see how this works? At least in this looking, I saw it very clearly. Thought, attention, and body working together, but only in non-alertness. The Course talks about this too. The ego can only thrive in darkness. Darkness and non-alertness are the same thing. In light, the ego is exposed and cannot thrive. That would be alertness, the seeing. Thought, body, and attention work together in non-alertness to create a false experience that is identified with as I. I am tired of this inquiry process. This creates a false I, a me, having an experience of tiredness, which is not at all true. It is evident, then, that false I is experienced through mind activity, which is permitted through the consent of non-alertness. It is also evident that non-alertness is a viral habit. A viral habit. We spend a hell of a lot of time in non-alertness. You know, Jesus kind of implies this in the Course when he says something like, you are much too tolerant of mind wandering. Mind wandering only occurs in non-alertness. It is also evident that non-alertness is a viral habit. Non-alertness is like sleep, and the effects produced are like a dream. So the I that is tired is a dream that was produced by the sleep of non-alertness. But it's not true. Can you see this? It is also noticed that there is a resistance that wants to shut down this observation and return quickly to the mind-produced effects. This active resistance is seen and recognized as what it is. So there was some very deep, deep seeing occurring. And something in me, which I called resistance, was quickly trying to shut it down. It did not want me to see how the dream of a false self is made, believed, and experienced. It did not want me to see how this is made. It was too much clarity. But it's so clear. It's so clear. It seems like I'm the one who doesn't like cold. It seems like I'm the one who doesn't like to meditate. I'm the one who... whatever. But that's only thought and physical or emotional experience generated through non-alertness and believed, and it never affects I-I. It just means I'm not paying any attention to I-I or true self. I'm only looking at the dream and calling that me. So all it really takes to break the spell of the dream is to focus attention, which I can do because I am not attention. I can focus attention. Focus attention on I, which is not affected by anything. And if I keep my attention with I, which is not affected by anything, this breaks the spell of non-alertness of the dream. And this, we all know, is the teaching of Ramana Maharshi. This is the purpose of self-inquiry. Asking who am I keeps you focused on the I. The teaching of Sri Nisargadatta, who says stay with the I am. The teaching of even Bentino, who says stay with awareness. Michael Langford, awareness, watching awareness. We can go on and on and on. And this one journal entry shows us why. Because I is never affected. I never falls for the dream. I never falls for a thought. I never has an experience, a dream experience. I, using the language of Bettino, is before experience. That's because I is before mind. All right, and my time is up, so we will continue this tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. You guys have a wonderful evening with Liz. Bye.